The cosmetic because. This in itself greatly weakens the notion of because that is often propounded by scientists and almost always misused by historians. We have to accept the fuzziness of the familiar because, no matter how queasy it makes us feel. And it does make us queasy to remove the analgesic illusion of causality. I repeat that we're explanation-seeking animals who tend to think that everything has an identifiable cause and grab the most apparent one as the explanation. Yet there may not be a visible because. To the contrary, frequently there's nothing, not even a spectrum of possible explanations. But silent evidence masks this fact. Whenever our survival is in play, the very notion of because is severely weakened. The condition of survival drowns all possible explanations. The Aristotelian because isn't there to account for a solid link between two items, but rather, as we saw before, to cater to our hidden weakness for imparting explanations. Apply this reasoning to the following question. Why didn't the bubonic plague kill more people? People will supply quantities of cosmetic explanations involving theories about the intensity of the plague and scientific models of epidemics. Now, try the weakened causality argument that I've just emphasized in this chapter. Had the bubonic plague killed more people, the observers, us, wouldn't be here to observe. So it may not necessarily be the property of diseases to spare us humans. Whenever your survival is in play, don't immediately look for causes and effects. The main identifiable reason for our survival of such diseases might simply be inaccessible to us. We are here since, Casanova style, the rosy scenario played out. And if it seems too hard to understand, it's because we're too brainwashed by notions of causality, and we think that it's smarter to say because than to accept randomness. My biggest problem with the educational system lies precisely in that it forces students to squeeze explanations out of subject matters and shames them for withholding judgment, for uttering the, I don't know. Why did the Cold War end? Why did the Persians lose the Battle of Salamis? Why did Hannibal get his behind kicked? Why did Casanova bounce back from hardship? In each of these examples, we are taking a condition, survival, and looking for the explanations, instead of flipping the argument on its head and stating that, conditional on such survival, one cannot read that much into the process and should learn instead to invoke some measure of randomness. Randomness is what we don't know. To invoke randomness is to plead ignorance. It's not just your college professor who gives you bad habits. I showed before how newspapers need to stuff their texts with causal links to make you enjoy the narratives. But have the integrity to deliver your because very sparingly. Try to limit it to situations where the because is derived from experiments, not backward-looking history. Note here that I'm not saying causes don't exist. Don't use this argument to avoid trying to learn from history. All I'm saying is that it's not so simple. Be suspicious of the because and handle it with care, particularly in situations where you suspect silent evidence. We've seen several varieties of the silent evidence that cause deformations in our perception of empirical reality, making it appear more explainable and more stable than it actually is. In addition to the confirmation error and the narrative fallacy, the manifestations of silent evidence further distort the role and importance of black swans. In fact, they cause a gross overestimation at times, say with literary success, and underestimation at others, the stability of history, the stability of our human species. I said earlier that our perceptual system may not react to what doesn't lie in front of our eyes, or what doesn't arouse our emotional attention. We're made to be superficial, to heed what we see, and not heed what doesn't vividly come to mind. We wage a double war against silent evidence. The unconscious part of our inferential mechanism, and there is one, will ignore the cemetery, even if we're intellectually aware of the need to take it into account. Out of sight, out of mind. We harbor a natural, even physical, scorn of the abstract. This will be further illustrated in the next chapter.